My name is Alison Price. I'm here with my good friend Owen O'Neill, and we're coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we're going to be talking about the planetary ingresses and transits of the day. We're going to discuss the moon phases and have a couple of reviews. And our 360 topic for the day will be Capricorn.
That's right, because we're going to be talking about the period from December 15th through 28th.
Yes.
And that is, it starts out in Sagittarius, but moves into Capricorn.
So that's right. So it's almost the last 2 weeks of the year.
Absolutely. Very, very close. And we've got a couple of Uber Capricorns to talk about.
Oh.
That's what I'm calling them today.
Uber Capricorn. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
So let's start off with having a look at some of the planetary movements.
Yeah. So the first thing that's going to happen on the 17th, which is a Tuesday, is we're going to have Uranus going direct. It's been retrograde for a while, and we also have a full moon in Gemini.
Yes, that's on the Tuesday the 17th.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the 21st, the sun will be going into Capricorn. And also the Venus will be going retrograde. So that's happening on the 21st on the Saturday. And the sun in Capricorn, we'll be talking a bit more about that. But some keywords for that sign are, as in my opinion anyway, enterprising, calculating, stable, stubborn, driven, family/history-oriented, and they age well.
They age well, yes.
Not quite a keyword, but it is a thing.
Some keyword, yeah, and I also like to use, like, say, traditional and...
Conservative.
Conservative is really the word, yeah.
Sometimes more in outlook than in presentation, definitely.
Okay.
Because they can be just as alternative as any other. David Bowie, for example, is a Capricorn. Very, very good example, I find. Annie Lennox as well, Capricorn.
Okay.
So these icons of the 80s who are now, you know, strangely ageless and every bit as glamorous as they were then.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's happening on the 21st. Then on the 23rd, Mercury will be moving into Capricorn. And then the following day, we've got Mars opposite Uranus, and that is going to be starting off triggering the T-square with the ongoing square of Mercury, of Uranus and Pluto, which are in an ongoing square off and on, and getting close to exact again in December.
Yeah, so Mars is coming into position to create a T-square there with the Uranus and the Pluto.
Right.
So...
Yep, it's a pile-up.
yes, and that will just gain in intensity probably the next couple of weeks after that.
Absolutely, yeah. The very next day, actually, the 25th, the Sun, Mercury, and Pluto will be conjunct. So that
right.
Also continue to... It's a whole jumble of...
That's right. So we said there on December 25, didn't we, which is... Christmas Day.
Yeah.
There's quite a big cardinal T-square. The stellium at their focal point.
It's a lot of energy, a lot of friction, I would say.
Friction on Christmas Day.
I hate to say that. I really do.
But yes, yeah. Yes. And yet, you know, it's with all these planets in Capricorn.
Yeah. I mean, it's family, it's tradition, it's institutions and... Well, yeah.
What we've done before, we will do again. We will keep repeating and stick within the rules.
But it might not be easy.
It might not be easy.
In fact, with the Mars opposition coming into exact that very day, it's chances are it'll be a little uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the degrees that are active, that I think it's what about 9-ish?
I think we said that.
Yeah.
I'll just have it. Look, for the Christmas Day period, that's the 25th, isn't it? That was what we'd said.
Yeah.
Yes, we're looking about 8, 9, and then the Sun will be at 8 and Pluto at 11, and Mercury there at 5, I've got that, on the Christmas Day where we've got that T-square.
Yeah, so if anyone has any personal planets in those degrees of any of the cardinal signs, you... might expect to be affected more strongly by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would we think traditional gifts are giving on Christmas Day? I'm not sure.
Well, yeah. And I would advise...
More socks?
More socks. You can never have too many socks. Warm, fluffy socks. I would advise get your shopping done early. with the Venus retrograde happening on the 21st, I mean...
That's right. That's always a good idea, because when Venus stations retrograde, it's going to slow down purchasing, I think.
Yeah, it will. And also, I mean, you know, Venus is luxury and you know, things that...
Gifts.
Things that are you know, that make you happy and comfortable, things you're attracted to. And when that goes retrograde, I think that, you know, the possibility for regret or for, you know, impulse purchasing and not really thinking things through.
Buyer's remorse.
There you go.
That's it.
So if you can get your shopping done before the 20th, yes, much, much better. And then also, I think, with all that pile up in the cardinal signs, the cardinal cross going on the 24th and 25th, you really don't want to be shopping on those days. If you can plausibly avoid being even outside in public with a lot of crowds of people, I mean, even being around a lot of family might be difficult this year. Hopefully not.
I think so. Some of those older relatives may just be tedious. Or irritable,
it is a terrible, but it's, you know, it's better to be forewarned, I think.
Yes.
And if you can just put on a happy face and try to be polite and understanding and compassionate.
Yes.
Just, you know, with all those planets in Capricorn, it might not be the most natural thing. But
that's right. So really what we're saying is that we've got a bit of a, there's going to be a turning point at the 21st. When the sun goes into Capricorn. So before then, it'll still be in Sagittarius.
Right.
And Venus is still direct. So that's when we should be out shopping.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
And maybe even partying or having your office parties and so
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely, yeah.
But what we're saying really is, like, from the 21st onwards, you've really got to draw in the wagons, as it were, and be ready and be organized by then for traditional festivities.
Yeah.
Because the sun moves into Capricorn on the 21st, that is also known as the solstice.
Yeah.
So it's the winter solstice for us, and the sun will actually start moving closer to, that's the shortest day in winter, is it?
Yeah, yep.
The sun will then start moving more, easing more back towards the equator again. And
days will get longer.
Yes, so it's the longest night, should I say.
Yeah.
And that's always a good turning point, astrologically as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole next week will be a little tense, a little, you know.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
A little bit of friction there. But but if you can sort of, you know, just nestle in and you know.
This is the idea. If you work with the stars and you get all your shopping and all your entertaining done before the 21st and then just tighten it up.
Hang out, have a quiet time with family and just, you know.
And that's what it's supposed to be. It's Capricorn. Right. You're doing traditional things that you've done. And whatever your traditional seasonal thing is, that's really what you should be doing this
year. And if you find yourself getting irritable, just, there's nothing wrong with going and closing the door and just hanging out in your room for a little, come back out when you feel a little better and more social. I know I don't mind doing that. Nah,
have the spirit, my friends all spirit understand. Of Christmas, yes.
Exactly.
That's what we say.
That too. Hot buttered rum.
That's right. So it's all picking up, and with Mercury moving into Capricorn on Christmas Eve as well, so then you're going to be changing what you're thinking, talking, and so on.
Yeah.
So all in all, we're saying much a traditional year, really, aren't we?
Yeah.
Where perhaps, I don't know, what values that we had in our childhood are going to come more to the fore this particular year.
Yeah, definitely. That's an interesting point. Yeah.
So those are very much our...
Those are our ingresses and transits.
Ingresses and transits, yes.
So let's the moon doing?
The moon. But the moon is always doing something, because the moon never stops. It doesn't sleep. So on the 17th of December, we have the full moon in Gemini. Now that's actually, the sun is in Sagittarius, so that's a nice moon. We have that every December, the full moon in Gemini. But on the same day, you've got Uranus going direct in Aries, so that should release anything that's been held back. And I think I spoke last month about dinner parties with the full moon rising with Gemini. Certainly conversation will be good. So this is not like a Taurian full moon where you sit down and have your dinner. This is more like standing up and having cocktails, chitter chatter and serving tapas, because that's the Gemini type food.
Right.
Nibbles.
Yes, definitely.
And the evening should be better than the morning, because Uranus will have gone direct by that stage, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, nice.
So that's the full moon. On the 21st, again, the moon will be moving into the disseminating phase, so it just moves slightly further forward. Good time to spread your knowledge. And in the old days, it was the woman seeding her crops, but we symbolically now take it to passing your information along, so handing out your business cards during these periods. If you go to these events,
networking, it's always at the networking. Holiday
parties. Exactly, yeah. That is exactly the word to do when that moon is in disseminating, because it's happening on the solstice too. So it's quite a busy, busy kind of day. If you've got, you know, something on Saturday the 21st, it should be a good day to make contacts that maybe you can use in the new year.
Right. Or the spouse's holiday party and getting to know their co-workers
You're the boss's wife, or you're meeting the boss's wife. I don't know which is worse. But whatever it is, there's going to be good conversation, good contacts to be made. So be alert to that. Yeah. And you can work it. And then on the 25th, which was Christmas Day, we do have the last quarter. So that's okay. You know, it's just the last quarter moon. And that's it, maintains that position to the end of our period. We were talking about this week on the 28th. So we've got the full light of the moon. We're coming up to the full moon. We're coming past the full moon. And the moon is very well lit for us in this period. So that's always a good thing for the moon.
Definitely. Well, that is the next 2 weeks. And
it is.
Yeah. And as we said, the sun will be moving into Capricorn on the 21st.
Yes.
So we have a few notable Capricorns to talk about.
To talk about.
Yeah. So some more keywords for Capricorn. This is my Mercury in Capricorn words. We're authoritative, conservative, rational, and sometimes a perverse sense of humor, which is an interesting one. A good example is, oh gosh, what's his name? Andy something.
Andy Warhol.
No, he was on Taxi. Oh, good Lord, I can't believe I can't remember his name. Andy Kaufman.
Okay.
Andy Kaufman was a Capricorn. And that's an interesting example, because the sense of humor is just weird.
Okay.
Just a weird off, the sense of humor where, you know, they really enjoy just putting people in an uncomfortable, uncertain state. It's not, you know, traditional jokes or you know, just kind of, you know, slice of life kind of humor. It's more just absurd, weird, awkward humor.
Yes.
Which, you know, is actually quite a bit more popular now than it was when Andy Kaufman was around and doing his thing. It was much more shocking and just weird, and people kind of freaked out about it back then. But yes, it's probably come into its
it's actually its own.
More the norm now. So there's one example. And I already mentioned Annie Lennox and David Bowie as just icons of you know, Capricorn's just
going on
classic
and on.
Style and ageless appeal, and how they still seem kind of cutting edge and alternative and interesting, and you know, and all these things now, even though they've been around for 30 some years or more, really, in David Bowie's case especially. And yeah, just wow, amazing, really.
Keeping going that long, yes.
Yeah.
Because Capricorn is the sign of longevity.
Yes, it rules the bones, in medical astrology, the bone structure, the skin, the nervous system, the gallbladder, strangely enough, and knees, which
the
I
knees,
suppose are
yes. yeah, Capricorn knees.
Become more and more aware of them as you age, I guess. But it's an interesting sign, and let's see. Yeah. It's the opposite of Cancer, which is traditionally, you know, it rules childhood and motherhood mm-hmm, as well. Mm-hmm, so that's...
So Capricorn really rules old age, or anyone who's really older than you are, no matter how old you are at the time you're talking about it.
That's right.
Definitely older men. And
It's sort of the what's it called? The hermit in the tarot deck would be, you know, very Capricornian kind of symbol. The sort of wise old figure of, you know... Yeah, so we have a wise old man in our Uber Capricorn.
Our Uber Capricorn. Who's our first Uber Capricorn?
William James, who Astrotheme has their dominant planet. You know,
has brought him forward for you.
He is 58.28% Capricorn.
Gosh,
which is an insane amount of Capricorn. He was born January 11th, 1842. Died in August 1910, and he was an American psychologist and philosopher. Was known as the father of pragmatism, which is so Capricorn, I can't even describe it. But I'm going to try.
Okay.
He studied medicine, physiology, and biology, but he was more drawn to the scientific study of the human mind. And at the time, you know, we're talking about the time of Freud as well, it was very popular, you know, it was the time when the sciences were really beginning to think that they could sort of examine the human psychology and scientifically really categorize, you know, why people do what they do and how the brain works. And it was his field of study, but also he suffered from a lot of physical ailments all through his life. He had afflictions of the eyes, of the back, of the stomach, and skin disorders as well all through his life, yes. Which at the time were diagnosed as something called neurasthenia, which we don't really have as a diagnosis anymore. But it was characterized by fatigue, weakness, general aches and pains all through his life, and the loss of memory frequently, which I don't even know what we would, you know, translate that as these days. And maybe chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or, you know,
something like that.
But he was afflicted throughout his life, more in his youth. He actually, I think, passed away of a heart attack, I want to say. For some reason, don't have that written down. But but just not a very, you know, a well person all of his life. And I don't know if he figured that might have had a psychological component, if that was maybe what part of his interest lie, you know, why he was interested in that. But it's interesting to note that, you know, nerves and things are considered to be a Capricornian sort of...
And the skin, of course, is the limits of the body.
Right, exactly. So these things that affect the, you know, the bones and the skin, it's very interesting. And also, I mean, just, you know, that would be pretty awful to, you know...
Yes, and did you say the father of...
The father of pragmatism. Yes, yeah, the father figure, exactly, as a Capricorn, exactly. But pragmatism, I mean, that the enduring contributions to philosophy that he made were pragmatism, which is defined as the, he defined it as the true beliefs as those that prove useful to, are those that prove useful to the believer. So anything that is useful and practical in your belief system is you know, is true. Truth is that which works in the way of belief, and true ideas lead to consistency, stability, flowing human intercourse, directly verifying sensible experiences. So anything that that is, you know, difficult to explain, you know, philosophically, you know, there's at the time free will versus determinism was a big
was the debate.
Mm-hmm. And so his belief about this was, you know, yeah, we can debate that forever, but, you know, you basically live your life as though you had free will. And if we're determined and everything is, you know, predestined, okay, you still have to live your life as though you have free will. So kind of, you know, it's beside the point, which I found fascinating when I learned about him in high school. He was actually one of my favorite philosophers because it's a very comforting thought for a Virgo. It's just like, yeah, okay, but, you know, why are we even thinking about this? Yeah. And radical empiricism was also another of his philosophies. It presumes that nature and experience can never be frozen for objective analysis, and that the mind of the observer will always affect the outcome. And empirically, the mind and nature are inseparable, which is interesting in the contrasting that with Descartes at the time and the you know, the split between the mind and the body, and how, you know, at the time that was sort of a radical, you know, thing. But it seems as though, to me, he's much more of a modern thinker in that, you know, the mind and nature are inseparable, which is now we've come all the way back around to believing that that's, you know, scientifically much more accurate, and that there isn't this split of, like, you know, mind and body being totally different entities. It's not that, you know, that the brain is this mechanical, you know, machine, and then we have this ethereal sort of, you know, animating soul, which we can't explain, that kind of, you know, as a puppet master works the puppet. It's, yeah, exactly. So it seems as though he would have been much more in keeping with our modern day thoughts on that.
Okay.
So that is William James, father.
And we're going to put his details on
You can go to accessastrology.com. You can see all of our show notes and the charts and these lists of people.
Who we're mentioning, yes.
Yeah, for other podcasts, but for this one too. And so that's one of our Capricorns, one of our uber Capricorns.
Uber Capricorns.
The other is Helena Rubinstein.
Okay.
Or Rubinstein. I probably should have jacked up on that. We're going to just call her Helena. She is 62% Capricorn.
Gosh.
Huge Capricorn. December 25th, 1870, she was born. She lived until April...
Christmas Day.
Yes, Christmas Day. Exactly. And she died in 1965, so she was 95. So...
She was long just, life.
And she was a powerhouse in the, you know, She was an industrialist, cosmetics founder, yes, of Helen Rubinstein Cosmetics Corporation. She was one of the world's richest women at the time, and just a powerful businesswoman. The, you know, just the heart of Capricorn. She was not an easy woman to work for or with, apparently. Okay. She studied medicine in Switzerland, opened some shops in Australia and Paris before finally moving to New York after the outbreak of World War I in 1915. And then she had this lifelong, empire of...
cosmetic empire.
Cosmetic empire. And actually she was rival for her whole life with Elizabeth Arden, also a Capricorn.
Amazing.
The other great lady of the cosmetics industry. They were both very aware of marketing, of luxurious packaging, of... ruthless, very powerful women and in their time.
But would you say these were women breaking into, not even to a man's will, but the business side certainly would have been?
Absolutely. And Helen Rubinstein, she went up against the American, basically the banks. I mean, and she sold the business in 1928 to Lehman Brothers for $7.3 million, which was an insane amount at the time. Okay. And after the Great Depression, she bought back the nearly worthless stock for less than $1 million and eventually turned it into just multi-millions.
Mm. So who has not used her product?
Right. Or Elizabeth Arden, for that matter. But I mean, yes, she basically went up against Lehman Brothers, you know, and just robbed them blind, which is kind of amazing. So she survived the Great Depression, came through it with flying colors, establishing salons and outlets in dozens of U.S. cities. And her mantra was, there are no ugly women, only lazy ones.
Wow.
I mean, how Capricorn is that, you know? So.
Very Capricorn indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not, not a friendly, cuddly kind of woman, but,
memorable. We still remember her after she's passed on.
And I've got this picture of her here. I'll put this obviously up on our website. But I mean, just the fur collar and the severe. She's got this.
There's another word for Capricorn.
Yeah, these thin red, dark red lips and black hair just peeled back and with a little pillbox hat and these piercing eyes.
Battling the lions, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Lions are,
Yeah, definitely.
A Capricorn thing as well, which is interesting, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So there she is. And little earrings and... Of course, the fashion of the day, but just very, sharp, angular, intense looking woman.
I think most women have heard of Helena Rubinstein, haven't they? Or even used their products. I don't know if it's as popular today as it was then.
Right. But, now we have so many brands, but
I'm
willing to bet that any of the counters that you go to today have learned most of their tricks of the trade from these two women. I mean, they pioneered having the little neat, uniforms that looked very medical and, it's like the Clinique counter of today, that was her.
You think you're walking into a hospital when they've got all the little...
And that was one of the things she pioneered, was to have these, to have celebrity endorsements, to have, the pricing just,
astronomical.
There you go. That's a great word. And to have all these scientific or pseudoscientific sort of explanations for why this thing works and why it costs so much and how, and that whole perceived value of, this will, whatever, revolutionize your
life regimen better.
And you have to have this whole set of things and use them every day and night and, very scientific, complicated sort of.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's something Neptunian about that as well, but also very Capricorn. It's all, there's no, only lazy ones.
She actually brought structure to women's makeup regime, though, didn't she? That you cleansed her, moisturized or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Which they, before then, they weren't doing in the 50s.
Pond soap, maybe, and Noxzema. And
Nivea.
Yeah.
What do we know? We're so young. But, they certainly, that's how it is now, isn't it? That there's a structure to it and you layer it on.
Right. It's all because of her.
Gosh.
And a couple of others, but strangely enough, we're also Capricorn.
And what was her percentage of Capricornian again?
Oh, goodness, 62.78.
That's incredible, isn't it? Because there are 12 signs of the zodiac. The odds are you're going to have 8% in each sign, and yet she's got 52 at Capricorn.
62.
62.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
So that's why she's on your list of uber Capricornians.
Yes, she's. doesn't get much more uber than that.
No.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that's them.
Well, that's good. And what else can we say about Capricorn, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because we've got Pluto in Capricorn right now.
Yes, we do.
And it's been there since 2008. Mm-hmm. And that's, Pluto goes through the signs. It spends about 18 years approximately in Capricorn, but that's the shorter. It's getting a little bit longer now. It's slowing down. It's an elliptical orbit, yeah. So it's not so much going in a different speed. It's in the short end of the elliptical orbit, we perceive it as going faster through those signs, through Scorpio, Sagittarius, and Capricorn, and then it appears from Earth's perspective to elongate as it goes slingshots around the sun. But it's been speeding up and now it's beginning to slow down again. It's going to be leaving in 2024. Okay. So from 2008 to 2024, it's quite a while.
So it's quite a heavy hitter astrologically, having Pluto Pluto in Capricorn, and during this period when the Sun and the Mercury and Venus move in there as well, it does bring up quite a concentration in Capricorn.
Definitely. And it really divides the generations, I think, Pluto does. Between Pluto and Neptune, there's a lot of, generational categorizing that can be done that really is just, I find, so much more accurate and so much more descriptive than most of the other classifications of the generations. I mean, you have the greatest generation, the Pluto and Cancer generation of the World War II veterans and the Pluto and Leo, that's from the late 30s through the late 50s.
Mid 50s.
And that's quite a long time for it to spend in the one sign. And then the Pluto in Virgo, the 60s. Yes. exactly. And then in Scorpio, I don't have these all in front of me right now, but in the I think it was 84 to 96, 95.
Scorpio.
In Scorpio, yes. I mean, right then, the AIDS crisis, going into the 90s, the grunge, the whole fashion style. Vamp nail polish, I remember.
Yeah,
it's a strange thing to remember being, it was the most popular nail polish of the year, and that was the last year that Pluto was in Scorpio. It's such an iconic thing I remember of that era. Was like this dark blood red, almost black nail polish. And all these crosses that people were wearing, crucifixes and crosses, ankhs, Egyptian
very
book
in,
of the
wasn't
day.
It black? Because black
black, yeah. And then immediately going into Sagittarius, which is such a different,
entirely. This is when she came out with The Secret, that Rhonda Byrne, she wrote that philosophy of law of attraction came along.
Right, the abundance through...
Exactly, just open your arms and it will come.
Right. And physics.
Waiting, right?
But it's interesting because, science and Eastern philosophy or all these things are very Sagittarian kind of, bringing in all the philosophies from other cultures and sort of, multicultural outlook on education and, bringing all these belief systems together and kind being an expansive in your beliefs and encompassing all of that, but also religious fanaticism. I mean, we saw the
jihad values the first time it came into Western culture.
Exactly.
The
first time it certainly became aware of all of that. And
was in Capricorn, right?
That was Sagittarius.
But yes.
Pluto in Sagittarius was, I think, from 96 to 2008, and so that whole period was, the not just fundamentalist, Muslim, but fundamentalists of all religions. I mean, the rise of the Christian right in the U.S. and fundamentalists in Israel, all of the different religions of the world, just kind of coming up, with their most, extreme.
Came forward.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had, the financial crisis hit just right after it moved into Capricorn, Pluto and Capricorn.
Yes,
and
the bankers.
In mid 2008, just almost instantly we had the banking crisis. And we'd had all this expansion of, all of this speculation, all of this financial expansion, to a point where, we had the financial bubble with the real estate. Real estate also was Sagittarian ruled concept.
Those toxic mortgages.
Predatory lending. All of these things came to a head and just,
were brought to the surface as Pluto went through.
Yeah, and Capricorn being the sign of, realism and, you know, putting its foot down and going, wait a minute, you know,
yes.
This isn't real. And it all came kind of crashing
And
down.
It's still happening, and they're still bringing out more things that are,
yeah.
that won't be finished sorting out until Pluto leaves Capricorn.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating.
Okay. Because Capricorn is ruled by Saturn.
Yes. And so. Saturn is reality and, you know.
Yes.
And institutions and tradition, but also, you know, things that are very much based in, you know, in pragmatism.
There you go, you see. Yeah. Because back in the day, the Greeks thought that the Saturn was the final planet.
Yeah.
The last the one, the limit of the solar system.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So this is where limitations come in as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a beautiful planet, though. It's kind of my...
Well, yes, it's got its rings, you see, it's got its...
Yeah, I love that we have these great, just crisp, beautiful photos of it now. They came out with a new one, I think, just last week, or...
I don't know.
It was sometime in November, but beautiful, just... And it has, I think, Venus, Mars, maybe Earth, and Mercury.
Oh, the view looking back at the Earth from Saturn.
Right, but Saturn and the, you know, they're all in the same frame, so to speak, and it's
amazing,
just the
amazing.
Most stunning photo. Yeah, the family portrait. with giant
the
Saturn in the
portrait background. Of the family of the solar system family, right?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Great.
Yeah, but so all of those things. I mean, yeah, the Dow. Losing 777 points, the biggest one-day point decline ever. It's right after Pluto entered.
Pluto entered the Capricorn.
And so, yeah, we've had, the Deepwater Horizon, you know.
Yes,
all
amazingly.
Of that and
amazingly.
Bringing, really, the expansion of, you know, of oil drilling everywhere, all of these things kind of coming into focus and reality and kind of, you know, mm-hmm. going, okay, is this really the best way to be doing these things? This is lessons and you know.
The Earth's resources, right?
Yeah, exactly. And kind of throwing a wrench into the, you know, the whole Sagittarian expansion of, you know, we just need to find more oil. That's all. It'll solve everything. Just print more money. You know, and that's kind of the dark side of Sagittarius is, you know, let's just keep doing more of it and everyone will be happy and fine. And that's not always
no,
true.
No.
It's rough, but yeah, hopefully balance is achieved somehow.
Yes, because Pluto's about halfway through Capricorn now, isn't it? So we've still got to go a couple of 10 years to go with this kind of planetary placement.
Yeah, almost 11 more years.
11 more years. Well, there you go. So, yeah. And, of course, while Saturn is in Scorpio, it's they've got this mutual reception thing going.
Right.
So, in a way, they're both governmental planets. So who knows what the states are going to do next, right?
And that's interesting, too, because we've, you know, in 2008, that the U.S. elected Barack Obama, first African-American president. And that's sort of, at the time, sort of a Uranian, you know, versus a Saturnian thing with, you know, John McCain being kind of the Saturn figure, the old guard. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the veteran and all those things. And so there was this, you know, kind of... rejoicing of, oh, we've done something revolutionary, and you know, but then there's the mutual reception of, yeah, maybe not so much, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe they're sort
old,
of interchangeable,
old.
Maybe it's you know, seems Uranian, but it's really Saturnian and all that.
Well, it started off Uranian, but it seems to be going Saturnian the longer it goes on, eh?
Yeah, and you know, maybe, yeah, who knows? I mean, it could have gone the other way and just been the same, you know, maybe Saturn has a bit of Uranian and vice versa.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But we've got, well, it's not to go into American politics, but we are, I mean, even though we're in Canada, we're very much saturated in American media and we can't help but, you know, hear of all these things. And they're now talking about election 2016, not already.
Yes.
But it's interesting, all these people that are, you know, that are now Chris Christie, the New Jersey
yes.
Politician and Hillary Clinton is, of course, you know, Scorpio, still, you know, being considered. Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, now being thrown
into. Are you
into
giving
the
us
line.
A prediction for 2016?
No, but, well, I don't know. It would be interesting. It'll be interesting.
We'll look more into that closer to
we
the time.
We certainly will.
Definitely,
yeah.
We'll have to. We'll have to
exactly.
Give that some consideration.
Yeah, I've been influenced by the Capricorn stuff too much. I'm talking about politics now.
But politics is a Capricornian
yeah.
subject.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, institutions and the paternalism, I guess, and
the government,
how things
the
run.
Man.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Even when the man might be a woman.
Yes,
maybe. Yeah, it's very interesting. But we've had a lot of upheaval, obviously, with Pluto and Uranus and Square.
Yes.
Since 2010. And that's been a major feature of Pluto and Capricorn.
Of a lot of people's lives, if those planets are triggering your chart, it really can be upsetting.
Oh yeah.
For people, and it won't. It may just pass as it moves through the signs because it's moving further and further deeper in.
Yeah.
In the beginning, at the twos and threes, it was triggering the twos and threes cardinals. And
yeah, that would be some of mine.
I know.
Yeah.
I have family as well with planets there.
2010 was a little rough for. Yeah.
That's right. So we like it when Uranus goes direct, and it really is easier when they are moving that way.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm not sure how long it's been retrograde.
It would have been 4 months. Four months, yeah.
That's interesting.
So it's always better when it's kind of moving forward again.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens with some of these people that have been in the news over the last 4 months. Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, these whistleblowers that have come forward with very, sort of revolutionary bits of news and information and bringing things forward and bringing things to light, And at first how there was, such resistance to it, but it's stayed in the news and, everyone kind of...
It's becoming part of...
Yeah, part of the whole thing.
Yes, so, yes.
Yeah.
It's just that when Pluto goes through, you've got nowhere to hide.
Right, yeah.
With Twitter and instant photos of what's going on and everything's changed.
Yeah.
And it's still changing.
Yeah.
But generally, I mean, we've got a month of Capricorn, so if you are perhaps a Capricorn or how are Capricorns going to enjoy this month, do you think? Well, when the sun moves in, it's got to...
Yeah. It sort of illuminates your, whatever house your sun is in as well, but...
Yes.
I know that when the sun is in Virgo,
lights your chart, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's always a lot of change that month for me.
Yes.
I think it must be the same for Capricorns.
And as the sun moves through, it will then conjunct your sun or what if you are a Capricorn and pick up the Pluto as well. That'll be a date we'll pick up as well, because it's always important when the sun conjuncts the outer planets during its transit round,
Which will be, of course, Christmas.
Ish. Christmas ish, isn't it? It's just after, isn't it?
I think it's the 25th actually.
Is it?
The Sun, Mercury, and Pluto will all be conjunct on the 25th.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Look at that. It's very good.
And then Mars opposite Uranus and, loosely square to all of those.
Mars is coming in to give us some tough planet T square there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you've got planets in the cardinal signs between, say, 8 and 11-ish, that T-square is going to be laying on your chart at that time.
Yeah.
So year is not over.
Yeah, try to avoid the post office. Try to avoid the the mall.
As we said, get your shopping in by the 21st, yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be in an airport either at that time.
Travelling?
I don't really like airports to begin with, but those days I would definitely just not want to be around any crowds, not want to, be around a lot of things that are aggravating, Try to avoid things that are aggravating on the best days.
That's right, because it's quite an emotional charged time anyway for people. If you have families, it can be a strain, and if you're on your own, it can also be a strain. So the knack is just to deal with it and prepare yourself for these things. So,
excellent. And people probably won't be very forthcoming either about the things that are irritating them until it gets to a boiling point, I would think.
So they say, I love the jersey, thank you so much.
Yeah, but it might just not really be convincing. With Venus retrograde and then Mercury going into Capricorn, I'm thinking...
So what do we think people are going to be re-gifting this year?
People might be, yeah, and they might not be as polite about, I mean...
What, this offer?
Oh, this is great, I really, thanks. Oh, I don't know.
So do you think, what about nice Boxing Day shopping or returning? What's that going to be like?
That might not be so bad. I would wait a couple of days not to advocate anything, improper or impolite.
I know.
But just, gosh, be nice to each other, that's all. That's always good advice.
You can see.
Yeah.
There's the beauty of astrology is you can look into the future, right?
Exactly. Be prepared. Forewarned is forearmed.
Yes.
Well, we've also got a couple of book reviews.
We do.
We're going to move into our book reviews. You first.
Oh, okay. All right. So the book I'm reviewing this time is The 12 Houses by Howard Supporters, with the subtitle Exploring the Houses of the Horoscope. Now, this is a book I would call it, for, I would say, for intermediate students, or if you're a beginner student of astrology and you want to learn more about houses, this is the book to buy.
It's a great book.
Really, yes, exactly. Most people have it, you have it, I have it, therefore everybody we know has it. he has passed on, but it is still absolute solid astrology. He fully explains what the meaning of each of the houses are, and then he goes into further, that's part one is the landscape of life, explaining a few things, and then mapping the journey. That's about what each house means, mm-hmm. and all the rest of it, and considering the angles as well. And then part three is called A Guide to Life Possibilities, where he's discussing then planets going through the houses. So it's really quite a solid book, and we would call it a cookbook,
yeah.
but it is still pretty solid astrology.
It's really a cookbook in the best sense of the word. It's just
absolutely
so useful. And
absolutely, and he has some great diagrams, which, because, you know, astronomy can be a tricky subject, mm-hmm. but he's, and the glorious photo of him at the back. But this is really a good book. If you want to learn what does it mean when Jupiter's in the second house, or Saturn's in your fifth house, this is the book to go to. It's got solid interpretations, and you can actually use them immediately as soon as you start to learn how to read a horoscope.
Yeah, I couldn't recommend it more highly either. It's really wonderful.
He talks a little bit here about the quadrants and so on, and the hemispheres, which is always a good way. And then, of course, the triple division house method, the personal, the me, the you and the us.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. You're just you've got the page open, and I'm just remembering now that was actually, I think, the first book that explained the hemispheres in a way that I finally understood, because it's sort of backwards with the eastern and the western because they're opposite. They're not. It's not where
yes.
you think it would be. It's east, west.
That's right. And right. south is at the top.
Right, which isn't proper.
No. Well, they did that because when the Greeks or
sure.
that lot, they all faced east, faced south, and wanted to do so. All charts, even the southern hemisphere charts, have to be converted to be read
yeah.
the northern hemisphere way.
It's very confusing when you first begin to learn astrology, though.
That's right.
So, and I believe that is the first time I ever saw a diagram that, you know, kind of said, oh, okay, now I understand what I've been reading in all these other books.
East, west, north, and south,
yes.
and like the northern hemisphere, which is below the horizon, that's, if you're mainly down there, you're introverted.
Yeah.
If it's above the horizon, you're extroverted,
yeah.
and broad strokes.
Yeah.
But I can attest to those comments.
Yeah.
And it, more east, it's all about you. More west, it's all about them.
Yep. Social and, groups
yeah.
and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he talks over here about dividing the 12 houses into chunks of four. So the first four houses are the me houses. It's
mm-hmm.
all about me, me, me. And then the second four, which is 5, 6, 7, and 8, they're all about us.
Social partnerships and...
What they call it, you, is it? And then the other one, the from 9, 10, 11, and 12, they're about we.
Yeah.
So they're the more outgoing ones.
Transpersonal.
So,
yeah.
So depending on the spread of your planets within your chart, you can immediately give a bit of a feel about what you're supposed to be doing in this life. So, you know,
yeah.
if you don't have planets on the we side, you don't need to go out and be humanitarian, because it's not part of your thing if you have to concentrate on these
things. Yeah, it's not your natural orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he does explain a lot of things. It really is a great book. And I can see I've been writing in it here, which I don't normally do, but anyway.
I do that with really good books that I know I'm going to keep, that I have no intention of taking back to the used bookstore and trading in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was brought up in a household where you weren't allowed to bend the corner or anything. Books weren't allowed on the floor. They had to be respected
yeah.
because, you know. But these days, for my mind, they're more working... books as well, and this is definitely one of them. I do recommend it, and you've got it, and I'm sure
yeah.
you do too, right?
Absolutely.
So that's it. I'll just, again, we'll put up a link to the image and that, the 12 houses by Howard Supporters. That's
yeah.
our our first book review.
Yeah, and I also have a book that's been around for a while. It's actually published in 1980, but it's called The Astrologer's Node Book by Donna Fantone. And I find it, it's a tiny little book, and it's just, the descriptions are, well, first of all, they're entertaining. It's just written in such a lively sort of language.
Yes.
And I have an example here, and it's from my chart.
Ooh, do share it with us, Arwen. So which nodes do you have? Where are your nodes?
My
then?
North node is in Capricorn.
Okay.
South node in Cancer. And that's my north node is in the third house,
mm-hmm.
which is the house of communications and whatnot. So I've got, Capricorn obviously being, what have you, business and
I have my north node in
entrepreneurial,
the
leadership-y
too.
Things. Really?
Yeah.
And so...
And here we are.
Right. And it's funny that my... My job title has been internal communications in for the last decade, which I think is kind of appropriate for that combination. Communications being the third house, and
this is interesting that I didn't know about you before today.
Another word for it is corporate communications, which is hilarious. Because it's so Capricorn in the third house, it's corporate and communications.
So do share with us the north node in the third house.
I'm literally trying to find it. Funnily enough, I did fold down a page, but it's not the right page. So,
okay. Yes, I was strange. I've got that north node in the third house, but now in Libra, so that's just slightly different. But still a cardinal sign, so clearly,
yeah,
you've got this handy dandy notebook.
Right. And this is, I don't know if this is actually a representative example, to be honest, because I have been reading it piece by piece and fluttering about from here to there. But. It's got these little observations about Capricorn North Node and the problems of it and the possible reasons for those problems and then possible solutions. So problems are you've adopted real or imagined responsibilities to others that keep you from becoming all that you can become. Mm-hmm. That's the typical problem that has, that node has. And then the possible reasons for that are fear of public exposure, lack of planning, a feeling that you're unworthy in some way, or refusal to let others lead their own lives. So these are these refer back to the South Node in Cancer being sort of the motherly and also the childlike thing mm-hmm. of, not taking responsibility or, taking care of others and not letting them do their own thing and then blaming your own caretaking for not, for the reasons why your own life, you haven't, taken forward the Capricornian sort of, gone forward and become an entrepreneur or what have you.
Right.
Because you're going, I'm taking care of everyone else. How can I do that? So the possible solutions are sort of irreverent, which I found hilarious. But it's the first astrology book I've ever seen where commit suicide is one of them.
Oh, I see.
Which I'm not sure if that's characteristic of the rest of the book. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily good advice, but I found it just charming as hell that was in there. Take cautious steps towards the careers, honors, or recognition that you want. It says, examine your needs and responsibilities honestly. Take steps to balance things out. Get a divorce, commit suicide, study the lives and actions of others.
Goodness.
Which I just thought that, maybe it's my Scorpio rising, but I found that hilarious. And,
great.
That was what caught me and drew me in, I think. Because we all do this. We all do this when we're in the bookstore. We'll flip open any astrology book that we're thinking about getting to a page that
we relate to,
just to see if, is what she or he says about me resonant. And, I've heard other astrologers say that that's like just the wrong way to choose. The wrong way to choose your house system, the wrong way to whatever. But we all do it. And when I saw that, I was like, all right, I'm getting this
that book for you. So that book just jumped out of your... And what was that book called
it's
again?
It's called The Astrologer's Node Book. Yep. And we'll have that up on our website, accessastrology.com. In our show notes as well.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's an older book, but I found it in a used bookstore, and I'm assuming it's available and around. I haven't actually gone to Amazon.com to see if it is there, but if it is, we will link to it.
I'm sure we can get it if we want.
Have
you met Donna?
No. It's funny, though, how it's such a tight-knit community. Any of these people that we talk about who have written these books,
I know. Well, of course, Donna's the woman who runs the SOTA.
Yeah, And I mean, I've never actually, I've just been to the one conference out in Toronto, but it was in 2006.
And, yeah, before my time, that. Yeah. It just shows you.
It's so funny. Yeah.
So that's great. So that's the moon's nodes. Again, a cookbooky type, would you say? But solid. Would you recommend it for beginners, intermediate?
Probably intermediate. I honestly haven't read through it enough to.
Okay.
But it does. It goes into all the planets aspecting the nodes as well.
Oh.
So you get little very short paragraphs.
That's great.
Of, you know, Saturn sextile the north node, or you know, Saturn conjunct the south node, which I have. So, you know.
Do you? Oh.
I just got this look of. I don't know what that was. Trepidation, pity, something. No.
But, I mean, conjunctions to the nodes are very powerful. Yeah. I mean, to my mind, the north node is like your future and the south node is your past and what you're bringing with you into this life.
Yeah.
So clearly, yeah.
Well, here's what it says, just since I've brought it up. Saturn conjunct the south node. Growth may trigger feelings of not fitting in or being out of touch. Conformity may lead to stagnation. Well, there's a good excuse.
Do you feel like
excuse
that?
To not conform. I don't know. I've never conformed,
no,
so
ever.
I'm not sure if I know what that would be like. There's a strong feeling of something missing within, leading to dissatisfaction with relationships and circumstances. As with Saturn conjunct the North Node, there may be illnesses or a tendency to repress awareness for the need for growth. Sure. Yeah, that could happen.
There you go. So that's a great book.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I think so what she says about illness is, I kind of just, the first thing I thought of was this illness that I had in eighth grade, which was probably the worst grade for me in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had to leave school for a couple of months. And it was stress related because my friends had, a few of them had left the school and I was, really uncomfortable. I had to, just a really rough time that year, and peers and whatnot, and I had a couple of mean girls that were intent on bullying me and intimidating me constantly. These days bullying is a big thing, and I don't know what it's like growing up now, but I was exactly I mean, thank God I didn't have Facebook and all that stuff to contend with when I was growing up. I just had couple of mean girls, no big deal.
Okay.
At the time, though, it was a big deal, and I made myself sick to get out of it. So, I think that maybe has something to do with what she's talking about.
Oh, okay.
This sort of,
So you can relate.
Yeah, hiding from the world in illness, kind of, as a defense mechanism, maybe. But I'm all over that now.
Well, I see you're all in all your glory.
Yeah. No, I just hide from going on plane trips to avoid getting sick.
Oh.
So those are our reviews. And
so that's great books.
Yeah, we'll have those up on the website. And
so this was our
Capricorn
podcast for the last 2 weeks of 2013, basically.
Yeah.
And
next time we'll be talking about 2014.
2014 and what it holds for you.
Right.
Or us.
Or the world. Yeah. Well, Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews. And you can find us on Twitter at Axis Astrology. And you can also find our website at axisastrology.com. We have all of our show notes, all of our previous podcasts you can listen to, you can download, you can follow us, all kinds of stuff. You can email us at
axisastrology@gmail.com.
Right. Ask us questions, suggestions, anything. We would love to hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah. This has been Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with
Alison Price, and thank you for listening.
Thanks. Join us next time.